Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Stone Chapel, a podcast of the staff and friends of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston, Texas. My name is David Capes. I'm the Senior Research Fellow at the Library and your host for this series of podcasts. Our purpose is fairly simple. We want to bring to you great conversations with leading experts from around the world on biblical, theological, historical, and archaeological themes. Well, the list goes on. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Joining me today on the Stone Chapel is Dr. Janine Brown. She's a professor of New Testament at Bethel Seminary, and she's the author of a terrific new book. Well, it's not that new, but it's sort of new. The Gospels as Stories, a Narrative Approach to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Janine, welcome.
I'm so glad to be with you, David.
This is your second time at the library.
It is. I was here last summer on my work with the NIV translation team.
Yeah. And you're here on a panel this week talking about the doctrine of the atonement.
Yes, an easy topic.
Easy thing. Yeah, everybody agrees on that.
Oh, my goodness.
There's no disagreements at all.
It was a boring panel for that reason. No, it wasn't.
No, it was very exciting.
Engaging.
Yes, it was. Impressions of the place.
When you asked me to come this time, I told Tim, my husband, love going there. So that was not a question. It was just a matter of you asked me in the middle of Omicron and will this work? So it has worked and I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
I love the books and wandering through the stacks here in this room, but also just all the way around the walls, downstairs and upstairs. It's a gorgeous place.
Yeah.
And if you like books and if they calm you, it's a good place to come.
I call it a place of solace and discovery. Mm-hmm. A lot of people come here and find just a quiet time, and they need some quiet space, like a sane space in their lives, right? So and then there's plenty of stuff that you can learn while you're here, right?
I've been looking at books, thinking I want to look at that and that and that.
Well, for those who don't know you, who is Dr. Janine Brown?
I teach New Testament at Bethel Seminary. Have done so full time for 22 years. I did my doctoral work in the Gospels, in the Gospel of Matthew, and have written on the Gospels and on the topic of hermeneutics or the interpretation of Scripture, and a little bit recently on Paul even.
Yes, the book on Philippians.
Mm-hmm, Philippians.
I know you and Mark were talking about Philippians yesterday,
yes,
I think it was.
It's a wonderful letter.
Yeah. So. Well, this is not your last time here, we hope. We hope to have you back a lot.
So
this book that you've written, The Gospel as Stories, tell us a little bit. What's the big idea of the book?
Well, since my doctoral work, I have really delved into a narrative reading of the Gospels. And you could say, well, that's obvious. They're narratives. But a narrative approach to the Gospels, or what's called narrative criticism, which means simply a narrative approach, means that we really try to take the whole of a single Gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, on its own terms, and think about the storyline. Think about the way the plot unfolds. Think about the characters that emerge in the story and how that contributes to meaning. And of course, for each of the gospel writers, that meaning is deeply theological. So I take on what does it mean to read narrative in the interests of theological interpretation, the theology of these four gospel writers. Mm.
I remember reading years ago and thinking about the gospel writers as sort of cut and paste people who are writing a freshman paper, and they get a quote out of this place and they put it in, they get a quote, and then there's no real coherence to it at that point. And there have been some scholars that have argued in times past that the gospels really are cut and paste pieces, right? That Matthew maybe used Mark, and so he just took stories about Mark in some random order that only he knows, sort of interspersed other material around it. But that's not at all what you find when you take a narrative approach.
That's true. I do believe that arrangement is part of what the gospel writers are doing with source material, because these are historical narratives, so they don't just make things up in their head. And yet, that arrangement, I think, is very carefully and thoughtfully done. My first set of chapters in the book, after introducing a narrative approach in chapter one, those chapters take on the idea of plotting, P-L-O-T-T-I-N-G, the plotting, the plot and the plotting of the Gospels. And then I chapter 2 does that, and then in chapter 3 I take Luke as an example of plotting and think about how the arrangement is crucial to meaning and is thoughtfully done. Each gospel, it does have different arrangements of material. I mean, there's obviously overlap, especially in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but there's very interesting, unique features all the way through in terms of arrangement, in terms of which characters are most prominent, certainly Jesus in all of them. And the other people around him look different in different gospels. Samaritans show up much more in Luke and the companion volume Acts than in Matthew, Mark, and John. Although we could say the Samaritan woman of chapter 4 of John is pretty important.
Pretty important there too.
So just paying attention to those features. So characters, plot, that means conflict, the driving movement of the plot, the climax in the crucifixion scene for each gospel, and of course the resurrection as an important, crucial moment at the very end.
So how does chronology fit into all this? I mean, broadly they're chronological, at least in those that have birth narrative. Jesus is born, in the end he dies and is resurrected. But in all that in-between space, how do you think about chronology?
That's a great question. Ancient biographies, or bioi, are in some ways like modern biographies, but in many ways not like modern biographies. There is a keen interest in thematic arrangement, so that the general contours of a story would be chronological, but the public ministry or the public debut of any particular figure in Greco-Roman biography, at that point you can sort of hear this episodic movement from episode to episode, with theme being very important. So you can cluster particular episodes, as we see with the healings that are clustered in Matthew 8 and 9. And other places you can have clusterings of parables, as in Mark 4, or Matthew 13, if you want to see a larger group. And the Luke travel narrative, 9 through 19, lots of parables, but not clustered as much as kind of interspersed. So there's sort of not one way that a biographer in the first century is required to do that, but they have some flexibility. Certainly, generally chronological when you think big picture, but on the more moment-to-moment, episode-to-episode arrangement, chronology is not necessarily the first driver. And that makes interpretation so interesting, to think of why is this what is the arrangement doing? What is Luke doing in this arrangement? What is Matthew doing? It gets us to the theological level without losing the sense that, yes, of course, this is historical. But if chronology is not a driving factor, then we are wrong as interpreters to say chronology must be a driving factor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when you use the phrase, the gospel is stories, there's been an emphasis upon story. And there's a sense in which, I think you talk in the early part of the book about how we are hardwired to tell stories, to hear stories, to derive meaning from stories. Tell us a little bit more about that in terms of we as human beings.
Yeah, we make sense of our lives by telling the story of what has happened to us. We often take disparate elements that we're trying to make sense of, and the creation of the story helps us to hear continuity and coherence. And, you know, and as a believer in God, I believe God, there is coherence underneath it, that God is weaving together disparate elements in all of our lives into a story, a beautiful story in light of the gospel. So the fact that in recent academic pursuits, you have things like narrative theology, narrative criticism or narrative approach in biblical studies, narrative psychology, narrative preaching. I mean, you could just, every discipline has some narrative wing of it. And I think it's because we're recognizing how important story is to meaning making, and how rich stories are for communicating meaning. I think a traditional theological approach, at least the one I grew up with, wanted to see theology primarily made out of propositions, kind of the adding together of various propositions. But the Gospels lend themselves much better to a kind of a narrative theologizing, or a way of understanding theology via narrative. And in my final set of chapters, I look at the idea of how do we hear theology in narrative, and then I try that out on Mark, and actually the figure of God in the Gospel of Mark. So not Jesus, but the figure of the Father at the baptism, transfiguration, and then what about at the cross, where you expect the third time to hear from hear God's voice, the divine voice, and there is no voice, but there is activity. What do we do with that? So I do a little bit of narrative theologizing with Mark, who narrative theologizes, if that's the right way to put it. So.
That's a way of saying it, yeah. When you say story, you don't mean something that's tacitly untrue.
No.
Right, because a lot of people use, at least.
I'm just going to tell you a story.
I'm going to tell you a story, and it's just kind of a made-up thing.
Yeah.
But in fact, this is not
a
just made-up stuff, tall tale, right? It's not made-up stuff. This
no.
is stuff the church didn't just invent stories.
No, and I use story in line with that whole sense of paying attention to the narrative. And because this is historical narrative, I believe it has this historical essence to it. But that doesn't mean the gospel writers didn't have some freedom and flexibility in how they told the story. Mm-hmm. The fact that we have four portraits of Jesus that are not identical means there was flexibility there and something to be said there. Irenaeus in the second century talks about how we needed four gospels.
Yes.
He kind of goes that route to say these are just essential, not a one, but four. Hmm. And I'm of that ilk that we are better off for having four, not divergent, but diverse pictures of Jesus or distinctive
pictures of Jesus. And they're complementary in so many different ways
I mean, some of the same titles, of course, run across the whole, some of the same themes, and yet there are some distinctive themes that are very exciting that you wouldn't hear in, for example, in Mark and Luke, the theme of Jesus as wisdom or the Jesus as the wise one, as much as you'll hear at the beginning of John and I think in Matthew 11, 13, 21, 22. It's a very implicit kind of narrative theme, but that's how narrative can function.
It's how narrative works, isn't it? Right?
Yeah.
And many of these themes, it seems to me, have a genesis back in the Old Testament.
Oh, yes.
When you talk about this fulfillment theme, for example, as you see it in Matthew in particular, fulfillment doesn't always work as, well, here's a prediction that comes true. It works in other levels as well, right?
It does. What's called the typological or the figural kind of way the Old Testament is used where, and it's often a storied kind of thing happening in the Old Testament, and that story gets recapitulated in the life of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I love the picture in Matthew 2 of Jesus going down into Egypt and coming back from Egypt, and then the use of Hosea, out of Egypt I have called my son. Well, that in the context of Hosea 11 is Israel.
Right.
Israel's
right.
called back. And so that's not just Matthew making a misstep. Oh, I didn't know it was Israel. No, he knows it's Israel. This is Matthew's Israel Christology coming to the fore to say Jesus is that faithful Israelite who's now going to represent his people. He's going to come and save his people from their sin, 121. And he's going to do that through his life and his death. In his life, he takes on their healing, their sickness, and he brings healing. He takes on the things that most oppress them, and he brings them freedom from that sin. Death, sickness, and then, of course, at the cross, that all culminates in this one representative Israelite, faithful, coming to die on behalf of his missional death, to die on behalf of the whole, and then for the nations, always with the nations in view.
Yeah, you got me thinking about the end now, where in the beginning, actually, of Matthew, where Matthew describes the fact that Jesus is called Emmanuel, which means God with us.
Yes.
And then at the very end, of the, you know, on the mount of the Great Commission, Jesus says, "Behold, I am with you always."
Right.
There's this with you.
It's an inclusio or a bookend.
Right,
that's really
exactly.
Crucial. And all Matthew commentators note this important inclusio, 123, 28, 20. It becomes sort of the big sandwich. And that theme doesn't have to populate kind of the whole of the gospel because it's put at those crucial moments. Now, it does show up in 1820 where two or three are gathered. There I am with in their midst. I am with them. But you don't have to have it all over the place when you put it at those strategic moments. I talk a little bit about that in the book in chapter 2 when I talk about sort of strategic thematic markers, that kind of idea of how you communicate a theme as a narrative, as a storyteller, whether that's somebody writing a fictional story today or you're writing the biography of Jesus, historical biography. How do you show themes? Well, there's a lot of ways to do that. One way is just put it at really strategic points.
Yeah.
Because the person will begin and end, the hearer, the audience, the reader will remember it because it kind of vibrates on both ends of the story.
One of the challenges we have is we don't really read the book of Matthew or Mark or Luke or John front to back to see these things
very often.
We could do that.
It's not that hard.
We don't usually do that.
We're not trained to do it. And I think both in the academy and in the church, we've been taught that the littlest bits are meaningful. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily want to push against that idea that every part is meaningful, but we only know what they mean in context. So I try to, I tell students, I want you to sit and read through Matthew in one sitting. I want you to read through Philippians in one sitting. I want you to read through Revelation in one sitting. I teach New Testament, so they're all New Testament books. But that sense of getting a picture of the whole in your mind's eye.
Right.
And I actually have them do some visualizing, because I'm a very visual person. I actually make maps in narrative of the flow of a plot theme kind of diagram, I call it. And I make my students do it at least once in their career at Bethel Seminary, whether it helps them or not. I just think it's really good to say, I'm going to figure out how to keep that whole of the Lucan travel narrative, chapters 9 to 19, in a vista, just one page. They have to somehow on one piece of paper.
Well, that's a challenge.
It is, but they do a really great job. Because I give them some ways to think about it. They have to keep the plot in sequence. They have to keep the sequence going. They have to show key plot elements, and they have to show at least 8 to 10 themes. And they do amazing things. I've had wall hangings given to me as an assignment. I've had 3D art set up on my desk.
Very nice.
Otherwise, I've had scrolls. You know, it's a good way to help us remember that we can do this. We can look at a bigger section of text and keep its main ideas in our mind.
Yeah.
Rather just thinking, well, you know, I know Jesus did this, but I don't know which gospel he did it in.
Right, right. And sometimes we don't realize that we do a mashup of things.
Oh, we conflate.
Right, we put things together all the time that may not really necessarily belong together.
You know, and that my favorite example of that is my nativity set. Tim and I got a nativity set for our wedding from my husband's aunt, and it's just beautiful and amazing. And it's Matthew plus Luke, right? Mm. I never want to separate those pieces off. I never just stick the wise men over here and the shepherds over there and, you know, somehow separate Mary and Joseph and Jesus.
Right.
But there's a great value in saying, what are the elements of the nativity story, birth story? How are they functioning in Matthew? What are they doing there? Mm-hmm. And same with Luke. What are the shepherds about there? What do they communicate? How do they help us hear Lucan themes? Mm. So I always say we don't have to completely reinvent how we read, but let's try on some different ways of reading and see if there's not something compelling about this holistic way of understanding what we're what we're looking at.
Talking to Dr. Janine Brown about her book, The Gospels as Stories, A Narrative Approach to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So if people want to know more about you, how could they do that?
Well, they can go to the Bethel.edu website. Bethel Seminary is where I teach in St. Paul, Minnesota. I do have a website, JanineKBrown.com, where I just share some of the things I've written and, you know, post every once in a while about something new coming out, maybe that I'm working on or a class I'm teaching. Yeah, and then just talk to people like David Capes who know me.
And listen to the podcast.
There you
go.
Yeah,
that'll help a lot. Well, Dr. Janine Brown, thanks for being with us today on The Stone Chapel.
It's been my pleasure.
Thanks to Brent Johnson and Janet Seifert for editing these podcasts. Thanks as well to Phil Keggy for our music. These podcasts are made possible by the generosity of Mark and Becky Lanier and the Lanier Theological Library Foundation. If you have questions, comments, or would just like to be in touch, please email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Lanier is L-A-N-I-E-R. Thanks for listening.